Maine Democrats are coalescing behind a progressive logger, their new candidate to replace Graham Plattner in the U.S. Senate race. But before Plattner's withdrawal from the race, before an allegation of rape became public, why did so many Democrats stick with the oyster farmer for so long, despite all the other scandals and questions that surfaced during the campaign? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what Plattner's failed campaign says about political allegiances and the nation's drift from centrist politics is University of Cincinnati political science professor David Niven. Welcome back, David.
Good to be with you, Lucy.
Great to have you. And Kenton County Republican Party Chairman Shane Noem. Thanks for sticking around, Shane.
Glad to stay here.
Okay, David, why didn't the Democratic establishment want Graham Plattner early on? Because they weren't always behind his candidacy.
Well, at this point, there's kind of different levels of the Democratic establishment. You know, there's the official party apparatus, and then there's the kinds of folks who command massive crowds and you know, move mountains, you know, that part of the establishment that, you know, Bernie Sanders represents. You know, I think one of the things the party is always looking for, any party is always looking for, is a safe candidate, a known quantity. And Plattner represented the opposite of that. He was, you know, obviously untested, unvetted, and he was really outside of party control. And I think, you know, there were some party elders who saw not necessarily this outcome, but saw the danger in moving forward with an untested product.
You mentioned those different factions of the party establishment, David. There, he did get some early endorsements, right? And early on in his campaign from some influential people.
Well, absolutely. And he was endorsed by Bernie Sanders, you know, back in August of 2025. He progressively added endorsements. You know, he added Elizabeth Warren, for example, in the spring of 26 after the first round of scandals had broken. You know, he weathered those and came out in effect stronger. And you know, part of the story, of course, was Maine Democrats had a perfectly acceptable, experienced candidate in Janet Mills, but she didn't excite anybody, even though she'd been governor, even though, you know, she, you know, had the stature for the task. She wasn't getting folks excited, and an awful lot of Maine Democratic voters showed their excitement by showing up to Plattner events, by making those small dollar contributions. They clearly put the energy in his campaign, you know, following on the heels of the Sanders endorsement, the Warren endorsement, and others.
Well, David, talk just briefly about those early warning signs in Graham Plattner's candidacy. You mentioned that he weathered some early on. Can you just briefly talk about those?
Sure. I mean, you're talking about scandal one was the revelation that he had a Nazi symbol tattoo, which is not typically the way one, well, lives, but you know, runs for office. And then, you know, tried to fuzzy things on that, was unable to respond, you know, in a way that was all that definitive. Then scandal two, his online past. You know, watch your social media history, folks, if you want to run for office in the future. He made an awful lot of statements online that sounded a bit unhinged, a lot of it's time to take up arms and, you know, and storm the castle kinds of comments. Then we started getting story after story about, at first, his sort of reckless relationships with women, and then, you know, allegations that were in the direction of assault. And then finally, the campaign implodes, you know, when a acquaintance of his said that he raped her, you know, on the record with her name, with details, with, you know, corroborating evidence. You know, it was really an astonishing example. He was something of a, you know, like a Terminator candidate. He took a hit, he kept going, he took a hit, he kept going. You know, it almost seemed that he was unstoppable, but it turned out actually there is still, at least, you know, at the moment in Democratic Party politics, there is still, you know, a limit to what can be accepted. And what happened, of course, with the final story was all that establishment support absolutely evaporated. There was no path forward for his campaign because all the folks who helped make it possible disassociated themselves from him immediately.
Shane, before that final allegation that made the campaign implode, that David just referenced, that allegation of rape against Graham Platner, most of the Democratic Party establishment, who weren't wild about him at the beginning, had kind of begrudgingly gotten behind him. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think you've got a couple layers of politics happening here. One is, let's start with Trump. Trump has made some major inroads for the Republican Party with blue-collar voters. And a lot of the blue-collar union-type voters have really shifted to the Republican ranks in the last 10 years. And so the Democrats are really desperate to find something or someone that is a traction point to help them make inroads and, you know, speak to the common man kind of language and candidates, because they've shifted and drifted so far to the left. Arguably, you could say the Republicans have shifted to the right, but Democrats in particular have shifted to the left and aren't connecting with blue-collar workers. Someone like a Platner, you know, setting aside all of his baggage and his issues and the horrible things, on paper, he looks great. Bearded guy, flannel shirt, oyster farmer, whatever veteran. That looks like, veteran. He should be that mouthpiece. But then, you know, when you're so hungry to find that person, you maybe put them out too early. You don't do enough background homework on it. But I think that gets to the political moment we're in, too, is if Democrats don't win the House, and that still looks like a coin toss, maybe slight advantage to Democrats, then they need the Senate as well. And that seems to be advantage Republicans, but coin toss, to do what they want to do. And that's been the next 2 years having trial after trial about Trump and impeaching Trump again. They need the House and the Senate to do anything noteworthy. Otherwise, we've got more gridlock. So they're really hungry to have both parties or both chambers controlled by one party. And I think this is showing that they're really struggling to find that traction point against a very talented senator in Susan Collins.
Well, Graham Platner met with Democratic senators in June to kind of ease their fears about his troubled history. It seems like there were a lot of times when Democrats could have turned away from him and taken a different path. David, what are some of the things you think they could have done differently in this race?
Part of the storyline here, of course, is the subtext of this is a leadership battle. You know, Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate, was not a early Platner backer. He was, in fact, you know, with Governor Mills. And Elizabeth Warren, as we just mentioned, was on the Platner side. Platner declared he wasn't going to vote for Schumer for leader. So, you know, some of this was, there was a back end. If he could really win this seat, and then he gets to the Senate, you know, it helps further the cause of leading the Senate. And certainly, of course, Elizabeth Warren would like to lead the Senate. You know, this is how this gets done. I mean, you spoke earlier in the show, you know, the legacy of Mitch McConnell. You know, a big part of the legacy of Mitch McConnell was being able to work the Senate to position himself in that point, to be the fulcrum of his party. You know, part of this wasn't about Graham Platner and all the details and what telegenic and well-spoken and so forth. Part of this was just counting heads, just pure old-fashioned politics.
We're talking about whether Graham Platner's failed Senate campaign speaks to something larger about our politics and our allegiance to party. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get a comment from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, "In my lifetime, I've never witnessed such intense polarization and intransigence of the citizenry. This includes the civil rights and Vietnam War eras. Combine this with the power of the internet, where everyone can have a loud opinion and can share it globally. The opportunity exists to create a lot of political clatter, bad and misinformation, and white noise for consumption, potentially delivered at the lowest common denominator. The path forward, think, and most importantly, vote independently. We have much to lose if we don't, and everything to gain if we do." Shane, you mentioned before kind of the doing your homework on a candidate. What about the role of vetting in this Graham Platner race? I mean, was there just a major failure there?
I mean, there must have been, or they did their homework and thought they could weather the storm kind of pridefully. You know, when a candidate runs for office, it's your obligation to research your opponent, but your team should also do a deep dive on you as a candidate. And if you're not in a position to comfortably ask them those tough questions and drill into and have that frank conversation, that really speaks to whether Plattner had the maturity and the intuitiveness to serve in office, not acknowledging his weaknesses. So I think that's an opportunity for the consultants and the folks that worked for him. The party, it's really hard for a party to do that. They should try to do that at the state party level or the national party level. But at the end of the day, the parties are made up of people. Like, we want to say, I hate Republicans, I hate Democrats. Well, when you say the parties, you're talking about a collection of people at the most individual level, a precinct, and it builds up from there. So if he had gained the groundswell of support with or without knowledge of his issues, it's really hard for party machines and party establishments to change the minds of thousands and thousands of voters across Maine overnight. Takes education campaigns. In this day and age, I think his name was Stephen, said, with technology and all this information, it's really hard to sort out what's fact and fiction. And I think the era of false allegations and half-true allegations and truly fake news, you know, you just don't trust any allegation of the person that you tend to like.
Hmm. David, you know, Shane just mentioned Senator Susan Collins, the Republican in Maine, Republican senator in Maine. How did Plattner stack up against her as a candidate? I mean, some would describe this race as a progressive with a lot of serious baggage, that being Plattner against the most moderate Republican in the Senate. How do you think those two stack up?
Well, most moderate Republican in the Senate has to be understood in the context of 2026. She's Senator Collins is not all that moderate, and she would have faced some, or will face some, enormous accountability moments in terms of her backing of the Trump agenda, her backing of, you know, ICE funding and so forth. You know, she's not skating through on I'm the most sensible, level-headed member of the Senate. You know, and I think Plattner minus the scandals was a very attractive, very potent candidate. You know, there is, you know, a hunger for somebody who can speak plainly, who appears to be real, who can, you know, say that up is up and the sky is blue. You know, there's a hunger for that. And, you know, I think that response is understandable. Now, of course, the irony is, part of that authenticity, of course, is very practiced and polished, and it's a confection. And, you know, here's a bottom line for Democratic voters. The last person that they kind of fell in love with these outsider credentials, who made it through the process, was, of course, Senator Fetterman in Pennsylvania. And he's turned out to be, you know, almost the definition of the half-hearted Democrat, and somebody that Democratic voters in Pennsylvania, you know, rue and regret, while the sort of polished, typical candidate, you know, who lost to Fetterman in the primary is now, you know, is now somebody who criticizes Fetterman and who the average rank-and-file Democrat in Pennsylvania wishes was in office. So this is the challenge. People want fresh and new and plain and real, but fresh and new and plain and real is entirely untested and can destroy you in multiple ways. In this case, by being unelectable. In the Fetterman case, by not actually, you know, representing the Democratic Party once he got to the Senate.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Paulette. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'm just so interested in how come you're not speaking to the fact that we have a convicted felon for president. He was convicted for assaulting a woman, paid huge fines, and so many other outrageous things regarding women and other things. And the Republicans have not withdrawn his candidacy ever or speak out against him. So it seems like it's interesting that the Democrats, rightly so, I think, withdrew this candidacy of Plattner. But why not the Republicans doing the same for Trump?
Thanks, Paulette. Shane, I'm going to put you on the hot seat with that one. There are certainly plenty of people who have problems with President Trump, that civil conviction, rape conviction that is on his record. What are your thoughts on what Paulette brings up there?
Well, look, he was the nominated president. His convictions were a settlement. This isn't quite the same thing. There's not been a legal proceeding of Plattner that I'm aware of to this point. So a lot of this is just the noise in this day and age. Every situation is to be taken seriously, but it's really hard to know the facts and sort all of that out. So I think at the end of the day, you trust the voters to sort it out with the information they've got. And I think they've spoken pretty clearly in both situations of who they believe and what situations they trust.
But how do the parties sort it out? Because in Maine, it wasn't the voters who said, get rid of Graham Plattner. It was the Democratic Party. And there was not that same response from the Republican Party when these allegations against President Trump and these convictions and things occurred.
Yeah, it's state by state and it's situation by situation. I think you were seeing the voters reacting locally, because if they thought they had the votes to win, I think they would have moved forward. But the party leaders were feeling the pressure and feeling what the November election was going to look like, and felt they needed to make a hard pivot.
Mm-hmm. Well, with all due respect to Shane's tap dancing there, your bottom line is the standards are different. And, in Texas, for example, the Republican nominee is Ken Paxton, who has a really remarkable record of securities fraud. He was impeached by his own party in the Texas State House for bribery. He had his office paid a almost $7 million whistleblower lawsuit settlement. He voted at an address he didn't live, so he's under investigation for voter fraud. And then, of course, he had personal infidelity scandals as well. So to say that this is all up to the voters, well, ultimately it is, but the parties can push. And in this case, Plattner was ultimately pushed off the gangplank by, the Democratic Party. And Paxton is very much the Republican nominee in Texas.
Well, and Shane, you just said the facts were loose on some of the issues with President Trump, but he was convicted of rape. I mean, that's the conviction stands. So, I'm not sure how loose those facts are. That seems to be a fact that he was convicted of rape. What does this say about our current political environment? I mean, are we moving farther away from centrist politics? Some people would refer to Susan Collins as a more of a centrist based on the votes she's taken. What do you think, Shane?
Well, I think the fact that we've spent a lot of this time talking about personal situations, personal lives, and we're not talking about policy, I think is always a detriment to us. But, good politics make good policy, and we're really dealing with bad politics right now, bad candidates, and corruption and immorality and bad behavior is nonpartisan. It's certainly an issue in both parties, and it has been since the invent of democracy. But I think we need to remember that these are people, and there are good people, and there are bad people. There are great people in Washington that have low approval, have their name smeared every day, they're doing really good things. And there's bad people that are up there and they're doing good things or bad things. But this is the most, I forget who it was that said it, it's the worst form of government except for all the rest. It's a messy process. It's a two-party system. The parties are the mechanism to nominate, but they're led by people who select flawed people sometimes. And so I think we need that kind of humble reminder that this is a complicated, weird, wonky process that doesn't always work out the way I want it to. We don't always get the nominees I want, but we work with what we've got, and we try our best as a society to get behind candidates when we can, oppose them when we can't, and then move on. And Billy Joel, we didn't start the fire, but we tried to fight it. Like, we're going to be dealing with flawed people for the rest of this country's history.
David, is it too far-fetched to think that Democrats in Maine or in any state could get behind a moderate Republican over a like Susan Collins over a progressive Democrat who has clear red flags? Do you think there are still people who will cross those political lines, or are the parties just so entrenched at that point that doesn't happen?
Certainly, if Plattner had stayed on the ticket, there certainly would have been the traditional crossover Democrats who've kept Susan Collins in office, you know, throughout her career. And there would have been a lot of Democrats who skipped the race and, you know, would not give Plattner their vote. We saw this about a decade ago in Alabama when the Republicans nominated Roy Moore, and an awful lot of Republicans skipped that race. And Doug Jones was, you know, the senator from Alabama because of Moore's scandals and underage relationships and so forth. And just to be clear, Lucy, so you don't get callers besieging you, Trump is an adjudicated rapist, not convicted, because that was a civil case. He was convicted of campaign finance violations.
Thank you. Thank you for that terminology. I appreciate that. So an adjudicated rapist.
Yes.
Okay. So Shane, we're running out of time, but do you think voters and members of Congress would ever endorse a candidate from the other party? Do we have that flexibility in our system if they think the other party is better for the country?
There's not a lot of incentive for that, because then you get punished in your next election or your next party election, because we got to remember that the party leadership is elected, maybe not in the same process as on a ballot every November, but party leaders are elected in their own caucuses and in their own process. So, you know, it's a team sport. And I've always told people that are like, oh, I'm a party chairman, but I disagree with this Republican. Well, then maybe you shouldn't be the party leader. If you can't rally behind your team when it matters and stand up for your team, there are things that you can do behind the scenes to have conversations, to advocate for different directions that don't require you to step out front and besiege your party. It is a party sport. So when it comes to the red versus blue fights, you got to stand with your team. Sometimes saying nothing says a whole lot, and you can do that as well.
Yeah. And for our listeners, David just corrected me on that terminology. An adjudicated rapist is a legal and public descriptor for an individual found liable or guilty of rape in a court of law. And of course, that was a civil case that we're talking about. I've been talking with Kenton County Republican Party Chairman Shane Noem and University of Cincinnati political science professor David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.